Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. Shelley Sakia has devoted her efforts for the past 25 years towards creating a plain-spoken, easygoing and humorous grasp on the subject of whiskey. She works as the Director of Distillery Education at Reservoir Distillery in Virginia, and she says her book, Make It a Double, will persuade even a teetotaler to want a wee dram. Welcome to the show, Shelley.
Thank you so much, Hannah. It's lovely to be here. And I have to say that piece of music is absolutely perfect, because not only is there whiskey in a jar around me, but there's whiskey in barrels and vials and beakers and test tubes. It is whiskey everywhere, which is, you know, in my book, a very, very lucky life.
Oh, wonderful. So when can you remember the first time you tried whiskey and what the experience was like?
I can. It was horrible, to be blunt. I think my very, very first initial handshake with brown spirits was a most unforgiving one. I was about 22 years old, and my then husband took me to Scotland, where he had lots of family in the UK, and said, you know, you should go through a distillery tour. And we went to this beautiful place on the west coast of Scotland, a distillery called Oban, in the Highlands. And as one does at the end of the tour, you're given a dram of that magical liquid to try. And I put that liquid to my lips and took a sip, and immediately became the female doppelganger of the green Mr. Yuck sticker, which is, you know, a poisonous sticker that parents put on all of their liquids beneath their bathroom and kitchen cabinets to get their children to make sure that they don't drink them. It was horrible. It was just very, very unpalatable, very offensive to my tongue. And I decided right then and there I was never going to have another drink of scotch or of whiskey at all. And I thought, I couldn't believe that people would actually do this a second time or try to get used to it. And then thankfully, later that evening or the next night, we were at a beautiful country house hotel outside of Edinburgh called Balbirnie House. And there was a terrific barkeep there who asked, you know, would you like to have a dram before dinner? And my husband said, do not waste your precious liquid on this girl. She has no taste for the liquid gold. And, you know, he was wholly taken aback. And he said, well, you know, what did you try? And he said, I gave her a dram of Oban, and you would have thought I gave her an ounce of poison. And the barkeeper, you know, sort of stumbled backwards. And he's like, you can't start somebody off on that end of the spectrum, of the flavor spectrum. You have to give them something that's going to be much more palatable to their uninitiated tongue. And so he brought over a tray of six different whiskeys that were all representing the different flavor areas of Scotland. It was the classic malt series at that time. And he said, I'm going to pour a glass for you of this beautiful whiskey from the lowlands, from the garden of Scotland. It's from a distillery called Glenkinchie, and it's referred to as a lady's malt. And so if you smell it and if you taste it very subtly, you will notice that it has all these beautiful notes of fresh cut flowers and vanilla and cheesecake. And, you know, I looked at him and I said, you're making this sound like a marmalade cosmopolitan. Hand it over. And, you know, I took a sip and did some sniffing and thought, this does not remind me of turpentine at all. And I was just so delighted and so pleased. And it was because of that man and because of his enthusiasm and patient tutelage that, you know, that moment right there changed my whole life. So I went from saying never again to being persuaded by one person to give it another go, but from the right end of the spectrum, and it has become everything I do, right? I write about it, I teach about it, I make it. Whiskey is very, very important to me.
That's amazing. What a great story. I mean, it's quite a diverse drink, isn't it? You know, most people either love it or claim to hate it. You know, if you have a bad experience, like what you just said, you know, a lot of people will have tried it and just thought, ugh, oh no, don't like it at all. And I must confess, I, at the moment, although I'm really willing and excited to be changed, having heard your story, but I am one of those people that I've had a few sips of various whiskies over the years, even ones that people have said, oh, this is amazing, it's really expensive, it's been in a barrel for goodness knows how many years, and I think, okay, I'll give it another go, and each time go, oh no, what are they giving me?
No. See, I think age and the price of something have nothing to do with your developed love for it. So, you know, whiskeys have flavor profiles that can span a very, very wide spectrum. So they vary depending upon factors like where they're made and the ingredients that are present within them and the type of equipment used to create the spirit or even like the warehousing where maturation takes place. So it's a little bit like working your way up through the Scoville scale, I like to say. So, you know, that measurement of heat from chili peppers. So you really shouldn't give someone the equivalent of pepper spray to drink when, you know, you should be giving them something much more easy to digest, like pimento juice or poblanos, you know, to get a feel for those flavors. But there's a fellow, Dave Broom, who I always like to tell people about. He's a Glaswegian who is one of the world's most renowned and celebrated whiskey writers. He places flavor profiles into flavor camps. And I feel that this method of his description is a really worthy one. So the flavor camps are placed on a scale, sort of a range starting with fragrant that shows, you know, delicate notes. They're very perfumed aromas of like cut flowers and grass. And then he moves to the malty camp, which is, you know, biscuit like and cookies and crisp flowers, stuff like that. And then we kind of move to fruity and spicy. Those are whiskeys that are infused with like butter and pine and coconut and vanilla and sweet spices. And then we move on to rich and round. And he describes those styles as if they boast of Christmas cake and cloves and figs and walnuts. And then that final flavor camp is smoke. So it's like very, very peaty, the smoke and peat and brine, which is, again, you know, one of those that I mistakenly had. And maybe you too, Hannah, have been having whiskeys handed to you that were on the wrong end of the flavor profile. But I think there's something out there for everybody. They just have to sort of, you know, have their hand held and be introduced to something that's going to be approachable.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I guess the one that isn't so strong and maybe has a kind of sweetness to it is probably a good place to start, is it?
I definitely think that for the uninitiated tongue, starting with those very delicate flavors, those floral notes or biscuity notes or malty notes is going to entice you to want to have a second sip versus, you know, if you are just immersing yourself in all things peat and smoke and iodine and antiseptic, like you're probably going to refuse that next dram, which is a shame.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's interesting you mentioning the Scoville scale and spiciness, because many years ago now, I never used to like spicy food. I couldn't even have pepper on my food. And certainly if I was at a restaurant and there was the word spicy or chili attached to it, I would absolutely avoid it. Now I would order something with chili in it or with the word spicy, because my palate has changed. But definitely it changed by kind of easing myself into it. You know, if you suddenly go into an Indian restaurant and have the hottest curry when you don't like spice, I mean, that's not going to make you like spice. You have to kind of, it's a gradual thing, isn't it?
I think not only is it a gradual thing where one's skills are being developed over numerous experiences, but it's also a sense of place and time, right? So being with the right people in the right atmosphere and having other things that are going to be memorably leaving an impression upon you in a favorable way, that's just as much of an influence to your ability to adapt to that new thing or embrace that new thing as just, you know, giving it a second try or giving it a third try on your own. So I think atmosphere is very important.
Mm. And I'm always, I say, surprised. I'm not really surprised now because we see it so often, but with so many dramas that we watch on television, US dramas particularly, how many people drink whiskey? You know, I know I'm talking about fictional dramas, but whether they're doctors or people working in the White House or big law firms or whatever, they're all just like sitting there drinking whiskey in the middle of the day. I mean, is that normal?
Only if you work in a distillery is drinking in the day probably a normal thing, but I think acceptable or necessary in other circumstances, surely, yes, one might be grabbing a bottle or a dram of something in order to get you through the hard parts of every day.
Yeah, it's just, I just feel like it's all kind of happened in I can't put a time period on it, but it seems like a while ago people would sit there having a glass of wine, but now it seems a lot more regular that people I'm talking about fictional dramas, but that people are drinking whiskey. I mean, have sales gone up in the last 10 years in general?
Oh, I think that there is a fluctuation based on, you know, perception of spirits or you know, any alcohol or whatever it is one's trying to make fashionable, and you know, cost is a matter. The economy, there's so many factors into what people are reaching for at the moment and gravitating toward. And I think that, you know, one of the most remarkable things is that at this point in time, there are more women who are really enjoying themselves in the world of whiskey, you know, both in working in the industry, but also in, you know, just imbibing in that liquid and finding that it is something that they don't have to apologize for liking, or they can, you know, be confident in their choices and they don't have to have, you know, a guy or a bartender make a choice for them when they're curious to try something new. They just, you know, this is becoming much more everyday and fashionable for women. So I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, no, it's true, isn't it? People might tend to see whiskey as more of a man's drink and gin, maybe a gin and tonic as more of a woman's drink. I'm obviously being very general here, but
yeah, I would like to do away with all gender stereotypes as far as, you know, what drink belongs with what gender, and just have people become much more confident with knowledge that they're accumulating from, you know, their experiences traveling or their you know, hopefully in my situation, reading a book and finally having their interest piqued as far as saying, oh, this is what this drink is. This is how this drink is made. Here are the stories behind, you know, all of the bits and pieces that go into making it. It's fascinating. I'm curious. And then satiating that curiosity by, you know, purchasing a bottle or going to a pub and getting themselves a dram or going to a friend's house and trying something new. But that, you know, inhibitions are being swept away simply because we're just educating ourselves and empowering ourselves with the feeling like, this is my drink too. This is my world and my ability to enjoy this area as well.
Mm. And do whiskey drinkers kind of see it as a drink that should be enjoyed on its own, as opposed to, you know, you don't see many people going to a bar ordering a gin with ice. You know, it's normally something that you'd have with tonic, for example. But I feel like whiskey drinkers feel that it should be drunk on its own, either with ice or without.
I think that you will find across the globe that there are certain whiskeys that definitely benefit from being highlighted in a glass on their own or with a small amount of water or an ice cube. And there are some whiskeys that that really shine well in cocktails. So there is room for both of those experiences. It's not either or. And, you know, in my distillery, Reservoir Distillery, where I work in Richmond, Virginia, we make whiskeys on both sides of those spectrums. So we do, you know, premium whiskeys that are meant to really just be enjoyed on their own to get the full extent of their beauty, you know, from the science of making them, the craftsmanship of making them. And then we make other whiskeys that are really supposed to be the foundation of a great, you know, a super, super cocktail.
Mm. So the process of making those two different types of whiskeys would be very different then, would it?
Actually, no. It's more about aging, the amount of time that you allow for that spirit to mature and whatnot. So you can go through that same process, which we do, but it's just some of our high velocity meant for cocktail whiskeys are pulled out of the cask a little bit earlier. That's all. Because, yeah. You know.
And do you, I'm not talking about cocktails here, I'm talking about the whiskey that you would drink on its own. If you were going out to dinner or going to a bar with friends, would you have a whiskey at the beginning of the night, at the end of the night, or would you drink it throughout the night, like instead of wine?
I have gone to dinners where they have been whiskey dinners, you know, a whiskey paired with every single specific appetizer, entree, hors d'oeuvre, dessert, you know, and there's a whiskey that fits absolutely every season. So, you know, it's not like we have to definitively squish, you know, the definition of whiskey into you can only have it after dinner or as an aperitif type thing. It is, there are whiskeys out there that just fit every occasion and every pairing. So that's part of the fun, the explosion of just, you know, exploring and enjoying different whiskeys and finding out, you know, what appeals.
Mm. Well, I know I said in the introduction that your book will persuade even a teetotaler to want a wee dram. We haven't even read the book yet, but we're talking about it and you've already persuaded me. I just need to find the right person to show me the one to try.
Well, yeah, the book has a lot of suggestions in that, you know, it's I refer to it, it's half education and half entertainment. So I basically smush the two together and laughingly refer to this book as edutainment. So it's part science, where I cover the makings of this spirit from grain to glass in a way that I'm hoping will leave the reader with countless morsels of usable and meaningful information. And it's part travelogue, as in, you know, a love letter to Scotland and her people and her stories and her food and landscape, you know, all the things that go into making this magical spirit we call whiskey. And then it's part memoir, where I stumble through 25 years of trying to muscle my way into and through a very male-dominated industry and find the answers to the myriad curiosities that I had. But most importantly, to find a place where I can contribute something meaningful, like giving you suggestions, Hannah, as to what should be your next dram. There's a whole chapter on that.
Oh, I can't wait. Brilliant. And one more question I wanted to ask you. When you are going out for dinner or going to a bar and you want to have a whiskey, do you normally know what you want to order? You know, you'll go for a specific brand that you know you like, or do you like to try new things?
Well, for me, I'm always open-armed to the what's about to have, just to be spontaneous. And certainly I will look for something local when I'm traveling to find out what it is that either that country or that state or that city is making, so that I can enjoy, you know, that the taste of that patch of earth. And I love that way of connecting myself to any city or any area is through the spirits that they're making. So I say, you know, be open, be welcoming, and try something new every time.
Great. Well, it's been lovely having you with us on the show, Shelley Sakia. Thanks so much for joining us. And if listeners want to get a copy of your book, it's called Make It a Double, and it's available on our website, tre.radio. Shelley, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Hannah. It's been a real pleasure.